in the Olympic trials, that is when, you know, I was still running fast. I got dropped and it was just hard. Like, I was running at my limits. Nothing was cramping. Like, I could push as hard as I wanted to. I was in the fitness to push as hard as I wanted to. It was just hard. And I remember just like going back to like telling myself like to relax and like, you know, I had like a real big motto at the time that like running is easy, and the marathon is easy. So I'm just like, I don't have to like fight through pain and suffering this last 8 miles, because I humans just can't really do that. Like, that's not the best way to run fast. It's just to grit through pain. So I'm just like, I'm gonna relax. Like, I'm just gonna find a way to do it. And it's like relax and like have fun, but just more just like relax and like find a way to feel good while running. And so that's basically what I did. And I went from like 20th to 7th in the last like 10K.
Hey guys, welcome to the Run Free podcast, where we talk about training using our holistic 5 principles. These are the principles we use every day in our training programs. At Run Free Training, we offer online coaching programs where you get a personal coach, you get access to our nutritionist, Joe Butler, the form analysis with our 1% coach, Mitchell Robertson, you get access to our online e-course that teaches you about each of the holistic 5 principles. Coaching packages are only $199.99 with a 6-month commitment. And with that, you also get 30 days of free coaching. You can sign up for coaching by creating a profile in our athlete portal. Find the link in our podcast description or head on over to runfreetraining.com. DM us on Instagram or sign up for a free consultation on the website if you have more questions about the next step. Well, CJ, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us, man. So first off, you just ran a marathon. So you actually did a 50K where you set the world record en route to doing the Valencia Marathon. But things went a little sideways there. Could you tell us a little bit about just your experience racing over in Valencia?
Yeah, it was my first international marathon or first international race. So I traveled over to Spain. I had jet lag like pretty much the whole time, or at least up until the race. So I was just trying to sleep as much as I could, like in the middle of the day. But I felt fine like during the race warming up, and like my energy levels felt, or at least I felt like they felt good. But I think my body was just messed up, because right when I started, maybe less than a mile in, my stomach started feeling weird, and then I felt like I kind of had to go to the bathroom, and that's happened like, I mean, a lot, especially in like long runs. And so I was just kind of like, okay, I'll just kind of go a little bit, because normally like you're pretty flushed out before a race, and I thought I was. And so, you know, I just kind of, you know, let some stuff out. There was no relief, and I just kind of kept going with that cycle for like 10K, because there was no bathrooms, and I was weird because I was getting like no relief, and I was like, how is there more, like, yeah, it was very uncomfortable. And then I found a bathroom, and I went, and I was like, how is there this much in me, I guess? And then I tried to be as quick as I could, but I was a mess. And then I tried to keep running, and I just didn't feel any better. And then I just like kept going, and I don't know what happened. And I tried to run another like 3 miles, but if you ran like that, it just hurt. Like, my back hurt so bad. Like, everything just hurt. And I just kept going. Like, I don't know what. I didn't eat a lot. Like, well, I never eat before a race, before a morning marathon. The dinner before was, like, very little. Just a little bit of carbs to keep you topped off. I didn't have lunch because I was sleeping. So, I don't know. It was weird. Like, I have no idea what happened. But yeah. I think my body was just really confused, pain and fade. I don't know, but it was cold, and I was just walking, like, cause I was just like on the streets, just walking, like trying to find someplace. And then I looked down, and I have like poop everywhere. And I was just like, there's all these people at the side of the road. Like, luckily they're watching the race, and you know, it was a great race. So, you know, no one saw a guy just covering poop, just walking down on the sidewalk. And I found my parents and my wife Because luckily, like, the course loops around enough that, like, I wasn't that far. I didn't really know where I was, but I just happened to walk into them. And then I got back to the hotel and watched the rest of the race from my phone, which was pretty depressing. I mean, it was cool seeing them run that fast.
Yeah, that's so tough. I mean, like, you have, first of all the training you've done up to it. Valencia is also a fast course, right? And I know you've been kind of floating around like 210 on the cusp of something special. How is that mentally bouncing back from it? And like, when does that happen? Obviously you're kind of processing it during the race, right? You're watching, you're in, going to the bathroom, knowing things are running away from you. Like, how do you even make that process or make that decision to pull out? And then when do you kind of feel like you start to get to a place of like, okay, like I can, there'll be more racing. I'll kind of let this one go.
First, the decision to pull out wasn't too difficult because I kept having to stop. Like, it's just like, there's no,
yeah,
not really a point. Like, I could run, like, I don't even know how long it would have taken me to finish because I had to stop every couple. Like, at that point, I was stopped, like, yeah.
Yeah, so, it's kind of surprising that you kept going, actually, right?
Well, like, I thought, like, you know, maybe after I go a while, I lost, like, maybe, like, 45 seconds or so, and I could still run that. Like, if I felt good, I felt like I could still run that down and still have a PR or run, like, 209.
You'd be the lightest you've ever been, probably, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little, yeah, but yeah, no, because like in workouts, I've done that. Like I've had to go and then you feel better after and then like you can roll and, but it just, that didn't happen. So, but yeah. And then after, I think like immediately after, it kind of hit me like how tired I was. Cause I had like no emotions, no thoughts. Like I was just like, kind of, I don't even know, like a zombie for a little while. And I didn't sleep. I tried to like stay up for the whole day so I could get on because we were going to vacation in Spain. So I was trying to get on like a normal sleep schedule after. And I don't even know. My brain was like kind of broken. And I didn't really have any thoughts. I really couldn't. I knew that I was sad, but I couldn't feel anything. Like I think I was just tired. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't even really like talk to like people, like, huh. I don't know, I was just really tired. I think it took like a few days because I couldn't even sleep that night. It took like a few days of like actually sleeping to like have some thoughts and emotions again. I wanted just to do a race for fun because I really like running or I like racing, and it was just like sucked that I didn't get to race because I love that feeling. And so I was just looking at races, and then I wasn't going to do a marathon. I was just going to do, like, some random 5K in Madrid. Because, like, in Fresno or, like, anywhere in the U.S., there's, like, you can hop in a race, like, any Saturday or Sunday. There's some little rink-a-dink 5K going on or 10K mm-hmm. or whatever. But it wasn't really like that. There wasn't anything, and or at least that I could find. And then I came across the Malaga Marathon. And I'd never heard of it. But then I was kind of, like, looking into it. I was like, maybe I'll do the half. And I was like, maybe there's some prize money in the full. And then I was like, oh, there is some. And then I looked at the results from the previous year. So I was like, what the heck? Like, this is a pretty fast marathon. So then I just was like, okay, this seems like a good opportunity. And maybe I can run fast there. So I kind of just, hopped in that.
Yeah. I was blown away because I was kind of tracking with you on Strava. So first I was like disappointed, like obviously with the way Valencia went for you. But then blown away of like, what, like a week later, you find a race with a bunch of sub 210 guys in there. And then it sounded like you just kind of had to throw it in with like, what kind of, like you guys were running like 207 pace or 206 pace for a period of that one?
Yeah. This was probably the deepest field that they had. But I thought the pace was going to go a little slower, like 63:45 to 64 flat, because that's what they had kind of talked about before. And then the first 2 miles were like right on that. And yeah, and then we started running like about between like 4:45 to 4:50 for the next like 8 miles. And I just, by this point, I just wasn't in that that type of shape. But like the whole field, like there's like 17 of us and like everyone went with that. And it was getting pretty windy, like a little storm was blowing in. So it was like windy and rainy, and I was like, I mean, it's hard to run a full marathon just completely alone. So I was like, I kind of just got to go and hope they'll slow down at some point. But I couldn't last long enough to when they slowed down, and it was just, I was kind of losing fitness because my last maybe 6 to 8 weeks leading up to Valencia weren't great, so I didn't have like just tons of fitness going into Valencia, and I hadn't done as many long runs and my mileage wasn't consistent. So going to Valencia, I felt like I had just enough, but then like another week of not really doing anything, and then running, you know, way faster than my PR pace, it just the combination of everything. And then once I got dropped, it was like it was just a battle in the weather. But
yeah,
it was fun still.
Yeah, you still what ended up like 2:11, 2:12 or something?
It's 2:13.
2:13. I mean, not bad for like just salvaging the trip. Like, I mean, that's not easy to do. I think most people just get on the plane home.
I don't know.
I'm super curious, dude. Like, I love how you just like float into races, float out of races, find stuff around you. It's pretty cool. Like, how are you? I know you're self-coached, right? So how are you, like, what is your approach from here? I know obviously you're probably eyeing the trials, right? That's like your probably next big goal, I'd assume. But obviously there's some steps along the way to get there. So like, what is your thought process in race selection? You know, like a lot of our athletes are trying to figure that out too, you know, like how to find the right race, something they're excited about, big goal they're going for. So like, yeah, what does that process look like for you?
For me, I mean, it's what races are fun, what races are exciting, and then what races also kind of somewhat work within my, you know, coaching and teaching schedule. And so, like, obviously, like, there's times that I can miss, but I don't want to be gone all the time. And I also, like, enjoy teaching and coaching. So, Boston's great because it's not, I mean, it's far, but it's not, like, international. So you're not, like, gone for, like, a week or 2 weeks. And it's also, we usually have like an off week, or at least the way I schedule the track meets, we have an off week, but it's because it's usually the week before our conference meet. So it's nice. We have a week off before conference or something like that. So it usually works out good. So I like to do like a summer race. Like I always do grandma's just because I'm off, like I'm on vacation and it's just a fun race. And I just like, I like just like running the marathon, like whether I'm in peak fitness or not, it just feels so good to me, even though like it hurts sometimes. Like I just like the whole atmosphere of racing a marathon. So that's why I'll do like some smaller ones or like some ones that like aren't like a goal one or ones where I'm not in peak fitness, just because it's just kind of enjoyable. And every race you kind of learn something different or like learn how to race. And I feel like for the marathon, that's important. And then in the fall, yeah, like I just chose Valencia. I just wanted to run fast because I've been running Boston the last few years, and it's not, you know, if you get a good wind, you can have a PR, but typically it's not a
fast course, right?
So it's just up and down, you know, you never really know. So I wanted to run a fast course, and Valencia was perfect for that. I mean, it didn't work out this time, but, so I guess it's just different factors, but
yeah. So what's next for you? What are you thinking?
I'm doing Boston. So that's like the goal thing. I'm signed up for Houston mainly just as like a training motivator so that in the next like 4 weeks I do something. And normally that's like a 2:11, 2:12 race. So I kind of want to just be able to go and have like, because that's normally around like my long run pace when I'm real fit. I won't be quite that fit yet, but I just want to be there, have a good run, and maybe close hard. But mainly just so I train the next 4 weeks. Because it's when it's the winter and it's cold, and it's when I'm over 10 weeks out from a marathon, I don't know what, mentally it's like really hard for me to like run by myself. So I just signed up for stuff just like so I can do it. And then I was gonna do the half, but I don't know. I don't know.
Are you doing grandma's this year?
when I'm not, when you're, I feel like when you're not actually super fit, the marathon doesn't beat you up at all because you're not running fast enough for it to like the Malaga one when I ran 2:13. I mean, by that afternoon, hanging out with my family, or, you know, my we went to dinner with my friend, like, I was fine by then because I didn't run fast enough to like have anything hurt. So,
yeah. Yeah. Do you think you, maybe it's just by nature of your training over a period of time, do you feel like you operate a little bit differently on that front? Because obviously you are very willing to run your long run super fast, willing to throw it out there in some marathons, like you're saying, maybe just doing Houston at like 2:11. Like, do you think that's special to you, or do you think there's a process that you followed to get to that point?
Well, I mean, I've ran my long runs on the harder side since probably my senior year of high school. Like, I don't actually know what I ran because we didn't have Garmin's, but I'd map out a 15-mile run and I'd get home under an hour and a half, like, just going off when I leave and, you know, using the clock. Mm-hmm. And like that, I don't know how many times I stopped and stuff. So I was running under 6-minute pace. I don't know how fast I was running, but I just run hard. And then in college, I'd run my long runs pretty hard, and I think it was like around 18 at like 5:22 pace was my fastest, but I'd always run like around 5:30 pace for like 18 or so. So I just, that's just how I always ran long runs. And then as I got into marathon training, I just kind of did that because that's what I naturally did. So, so yeah, I mean, after you do something for like 10 years, it's not really that, it's just kind of like a normal thing. So it's not like I'm like pushing. It's just like, well, I mean, I am pushing, but it's not, you know, it's just like doing like tempo runs. Like, if you've never done a tempo run, it's like, oh man, this is really hard. But if you've been doing tempo runs since junior high or, you know, high school, they're not really that big of a deal, and like, you'll recover fine.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, you've had the old school shoes and then the new school shoes in terms of like racing marathons and recovering from marathons and being able to do more marathons. I've always thought that like you can do more now because you get less beat up because you have the extra cushioning on board and all that, you know. But I was curious to see like if you notice a difference. Like, do you feel like you can run more marathons now, run harder long runs, like train in a different way because of the extra cushioning and the less beat up your legs are getting?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a difference. I mean, I was doing that before I got the shoes, because I don't think I got my first pair of, like, you know, super shoes or whatever until, like, 2019. So, yeah, but, like, before then, I mean, I remember my first marathon build, I did, like, a 50K run. Well, I did, like, a marathon in training and then a 50K and then some other long runs, just like right away. I mean, like 8 weeks in the training, I was doing that and I was recovering fine. Then when I did my first marathon, I mean, these are small marathons, so I probably wasn't running all out, but I ran the Fresno marathon. And then the next week I went up to Monterey to do the Monterey Bay half, and it got canceled because of smoke, but I still ran, like, there was some sub 60 minute Kenyan. I randomly, like, everyone was out running anyways, it's funny, but randomly, like, ran into him, and we did this, like, tempo run for, like, 9-10 miles under 5-minute pace. And then the next week, I ran the Bakersfield Marathon, and these were all in, like, the normal, like, I had, like, a pair of New Balance, like, I don't know what they were, but some flats, and then I had the Adidas Sub 2 shoes, which were, like, 5 ounces, I mean, maybe, like, 17 millimeter, like, it was, like, the smallest stacks, and I ran in those, too. And yeah, so I mean, you could do it. And then I did the Modesto Marathon, the Sactown 10, and the Indoor Marathon, all three of those, like, back to back to back weekends. So two marathons with the 10 miler wedged in between. Those were all in just the original Brooks Hyperion flaps.
Shout out to the Hyperions.
Yeah, so, but I don't really know how I recovered. I mean, I recovered well, but these shoes now, I mean, you can definitely do that even more because it's, yeah, they definitely take some impact, a lot of impact off. And yeah, I mean, Brooks is coming a bit, we're on our fourth iteration now, and the new shoes, that they have, like, I've definitely noticed, like, in training, and even after this, like, Malaga marathon, like, I felt like I wasn't, like, there's, like, no impact. So, I mean, there's impact, but I think the only really fatigue you feel now is more, like, the muscular contractions, like, over and over again. So, like, my hamstrings will get, like, my hamstrings and calves, like, the things that are just, like, really, like, contracting when they're, like, constantly shortened. Those, like, and the ones that kind of cramp up at the end of races, those you still kind of feel because, like, they're just there, but, like, more like the quads and things that are, like, more impact muscles. I mean, yeah, you feel them, I guess, but it's definitely a lot less.
That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I've definitely noticed that where I feel like it's, like, always, like, hamstrings and glutes for me recently. Like, I even did, like, a downhill half marathon. Like, my quads are fine, which, you know, is odd. But I was thinking about that, Ryan. I was like, dude, I don't know the hyperspeeds. I was like, I don't even know if I'd want to run a marathon if I still had to do them, like, in the hyperspeeds.
It's weird. I feel like you can't go back now. Like, now, no. I was just talking about this with someone. I'm like, I can't even imagine doing it now.
Just, like, glued to the ground. Yeah, the shoes. We were just talking about this. That was a question I was thinking. Do you do all of your speed work in carbon fiber plated shoes, or do you try to mix it out of there?
I do most of it, yeah. When on the track, Brooks has these, like, they're I don't know how much I can talk about them, but there's different types of shoes that are low, a lot lower profile, and they're really nice, but they're not spikes, and they're not in their, you know, and you don't have, because marathoners, like, I feel like, well, I don't know how many, but I feel like a lot of people will get hurt going from, like, a positive drop, like a, you know, your normal 8mm, and then they go to spikes, which is like a negative drop, and then, oh, why do my Achilles hurt? But yeah. But so these are, like, fast shoes that still have the same drop as, like, normal, like, marathon shoes or any shoes, you know, trainer marathons. And so I've been wearing those when I do, like, stuff on the track, and that's been really nice to not have to wear, like, the same shoe. And the high stack heights on the track and, like, the constant turning isn't as nice. So having a lower profile shoe for fast stuff on the track, anything with lots of turns is nicer. And just for speed, like, really running fast, like, if I'm running, like, 200s or something, or, like, under 4 minute pace, like, doesn't feel as good in, like, the, you know, the marshmallow shoes. You kind of want them in lower profile.
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of now you're done with this last stint of training that you've done, what are you, I guess, both as an athlete and as a coach, like, what are you excited about training wise? Like, are you mixing it up with any new training philosophy, or, what do you got going on?
For this build, I kind of do want to try, a little bit different philosophy, kind of like the, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, a lot of people are talking about the Norwegian, you know, the speed skater and all that. But I feel like the idea of just running, like, lots of stuff at your race pace, I mean, just makes sense. And for certain distances, I feel like it's hard to do. But for the marathon, I feel like it's easy to do because the pace isn't, like, detrimental to your aerobic development. Like, it's not going to, like, beat you, like, it's I don't know, it's an aerobic pace, it's, like, slower than threshold. But even running, like, slightly faster than the threshold, or, like, right around there, is, I feel like, at least for me, it feels easy on my body. Like, I feel like I can just run that every day. Not that I would, but yeah, so trying to do, I feel like a lot of the training is limited by, like, mental capacity. Because, like, ideally I would do, like, a 3.5 hour run, like, once a week or twice a week, just kind of moderate effort. And again, with, like, shoes, it's like, that doesn't really, like, beat you up anymore. And every other aerobic sport does that. I mean, cyclists are out there forever.
What's a moderate effort?
Just, like, where you're not thinking. I don't know. Like your heart rate's in like the 130s or 140. Like it's like maybe like 620 pace.
If okay.
Flat land, no altitude.
That's what I would usually think, but I was like, maybe you're talking 515, 520 pace.
No, that would. But yeah, so just doing something like really long. I mean, kind of building up to that, but just like, yeah, really long. And then doing like a lot of, like I had this idea of doing like close to like a normal run length, like 60 to 75 minutes, but it's all just like strides and like jogging. So your average heart rate is like the same. Like maybe your average heart rate's 135 through the session, but you've covered like 4 miles at like stride pace.
Okay.
And just because like in the marathon, I feel like it's so like anyone can run 440 pace. Well, not anyone, but you know, any professional athlete can run 440 pace. Your threshold isn't like you're not limit. Most people's thresholds are faster. And so like the only reason you break down is because like neuromuscularly, like something like, you know, your muscles are like just getting less efficient. So you can't run 440 pace anymore. Now maybe your threshold like 455. Like you just, you know, whatever rate you break down is the biggest limiting factor. So like running, I feel like the running fast is like the best, seems like the best way to improve that. Because it's just more of a challenge, like a challenge, or more of a. It's more.
Like you're asking everything to fire even faster, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, not like crazy, not like full sprinting, because you can only do like maximal effort. Like the nervous system can only handle like true maximal effort. Like you can't do that very much, but you know, just like. Yeah.
So what do you, I was curious about that, CJ, like, what do you do for your short, fast stuff? What is it? Cause you know, you're kind of known for these big long runs and stuff, but I was curious about like what you do for your shorter stuff.
Yeah. I haven't done like a ton of it. Like I'll do some hill sprints sometimes, like with my athletes. But I feel like my short speed stuff hasn't been very consistent at all. Like I haven't really like truly like spent a lot of time with it like consistently, and yeah, so I feel like I'm kind of like missing that part. When I was training for the trials, I feel like that was my best, because after like every workout I would do something like somewhat fast, not necessarily like crazy hard, but just like the amount of work I did like under 410 pace and like reps of 200s at like 26-27, like I did a lot of them, and I felt, I mean, the trials was probably still I think my best race, just given everything, and like I think like I matured and maybe got like overall fitter and just like better at the marathon, but I think in terms of like just true fitness, like that was my best, and I like was able to handle that course like so well, and really wasn't breaking down that much at the end, even though it was just, you know, lots of climbing and everything. And I think like a lot of it was just all that, like that speed. And I've had some cramping in the past couple marathons. Like this last Boston, I cramped up real bad. And, but in the Olympic trials, I had like, I didn't even have like, I had nothing. Like there wasn't even like a momentary kind of like, oh shoot, I might have a cramp. Like I was just like solid the whole time. And so I think a lot of it was just all the kind of, all the speed stuff I was doing, not like I'm busting out like, you know, 10 400s at like 55. Like I'm just, you know, just turning the legs over, but consistently, like a couple times a week.
Yeah. So what would be like a sample workout? Like what would be like a sample CJ special on the short stuff?
Honestly, I haven't like, I have to go back to the Olympic trials, because that's honestly probably the last time that I did lots of good stuff. Like I do like somewhere between like 10 to 12k of stuff, like of like a continuous, maybe like in and out, like running, like I remember I did like 800 at like 440 pace, and then 400 at like 520 pace and did that for like 10 to 12K. And then I do like 8x400 at like 63 down to 60 with like a minute rest or something like that. Or I'd finish with like 8 to 10 200s, kind of working down from like 29 to 26. And so like almost all my workouts would have like, you know, somewhere between like 6 to 8 miles of like just kind of threshold aerobic 10K, whatever type pace. And then another like 2 miles-ish of like somewhere between 200s to 400s. Not fast. Fast. Not like sprinting, but I try to run some 25 sometimes, but I'd have to strain hard.
That's right. I mean, that's pretty fast for a marathoner that's cruising. Because that's an interesting thing. So like I'm just building towards doing my first marathon and Ryan's coaching me. And so that's something we're playing around with, is like figuring out the nature of that speed within the context of also trying to get marathon strong. Which CJ, I think, you know, if you compared like your, what, 5K, 10K PR to guys that you're racing with, like there's a pretty big differential there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that like my 5K, 10K PRs, like if I was now to like dedicate a seat, like a season or a year to like running a 5K, 10K,
they'd be a lot faster.
I'm assuming they'd be faster.
Yeah.
So it's not really equivalent comparisons. Like my 10K, I've never truly trained and ran a 10K. Mm. I think my PR is still from. Well, my PR is in the middle of Boston, but.
Oh gosh, yeah.
In some training run.
So do you not feel, cause like I even getting back into it from like I was doing cycling for a while and then getting back in the running stuff, like all my PRs are from like my freshman, sophomore year of college. And I'm like, man, I gotta get back and hit those at some point. Right. Do you feel that at all? Do you feel like you want to just see what you could do for a 10K or 5K? Or you're just like pretty sold on marathons?
Potentially. It just depends on when it is. Like a lot of track races are like right around when Boston is. I mean, I'd have to maybe do like, I could maybe do like some indoor races, but it's kind of a weird time. I mean, I could take an early February weekend up to Seattle, but I mean, it's not really, I don't know. Like the amount that I want to do it versus the perceived sacrifices and like that right now it's, not, but like if it works out, I would want to. I mainly want to at least beat German Fernandez this time. I run a 5K. They have this Miguel Reyes 5K race on the Woodward Park course. This year was the first year anyone ever beat German Fernandez this time. Diego Estrada ran 14:15, but I ran 14:27 or 14:29. I don't know. But I still haven't beat German's high school time. It's also a weird time. I'm never in shape, like July 29th, but I don't know. I want to break that.
Okay, first of all, that record is so impressive that thing has stood the testament of like all the Newbury Park guys rolling through there. Like that was an impressive run by German.
Yeah. I just think like, he just soloed that, and like I've been in some pretty good races, and I still can't drag it. I ran the course like 100, like literally quite over 100 times.
Yeah,
I don't know how many times I've raced it, but it's at least 40.
Ryan, FYI, yeah, CJ runs at Woodward Park like all the time. Like
I live like across the street, like I can basically see it right now.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah, that's a good course. It's funny, I was actually coaching Diego when he broke that this summer, so
oh,
wow. Yeah, he's one of our coaches for Run Free. He's a good dude. But yeah, that was a long-standing one, huh?
I mean, that's crazy that it's withstanding like adult like elite athletes going out and still not running faster.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit, you know, I've heard you reference this, like the volume that cyclists or swimmers do within their training. And, you know, I've been in the triathlon world and the cycling world, like I've experienced that. And it's an interesting thing. And I feel like it was cool hearing you say that, because it is such an interesting component. I feel like we haven't fully dipped into as runners is like, how do we maximize just the time that we could put into aerobic development? Have you ever used cross training, or are there any other modalities that you add in outside of just running?
Not really. I really don't enjoy anything else. I mean, lifting is not really, that's not aerobic cross training though. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I don't really like, if I have the, I think, cause I don't think I maximize my time running, or at least like consistently. I mean, I'll have like a week or two that where my mileage is somewhat high, but not like mentally. My volume is limited by like my mental output. And so I don't even feel like that's maximized for running. So I'm not going to put any time into cross training if I'm not even what I think is maximized in running.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's not that I don't think cross training could be beneficial. It's just like, I'm not at a place where like, I feel like.
Do you have a super ability to like not get hurt, CJ? Like to be able to handle that kind of volume and work?
Yeah, probably. I think that's it. I don't think I've ever gotten hurt when I've been in peak training. So almost every time I've had injuries, it's when I've taken some time off, or like, you know, you in high school, you build up again in the summer. Almost all of my injuries were there, but probably because you're doing something different. But and then in the steeplechase, I had the same abdominal injury every time, but that's because I wasn't a great steepler, but I just did it. And the water jump, I was pretty bad. But besides that, like peak marathon training, yeah, when I'm like really running a lot, I don't think I've ever been hurt. I think you kind of get in a routine, and when I'm doing the volume consistently, like my body is adapted, and
What are you doing? You mentioned lifting. What are you doing in the weight room? Anything in there do you think is helping you stay healthy? Because I know that's like a hard thing for athletes. It's like Sarah just got IT band. It's been bothering her for a while, and it was just like something that popped up, you know, like we were right in the middle of it. Everything was clicking. She's going great. And then dang, IT band. So is there anything that you do like in the weight? Well, first off, I'd just love to hear what your routine is in the weight room, but anything in particular that like you think helps keep you healthy?
I think what keeps me healthy isn't necessarily what I've been doing now, but it's just growing up. And I think I've said this in other things, but just like growing up, I played like every sport. I just did everything and did a lot of weight bearing sports. I played a lot of basketball. So I was always jumping. And then, I did a lot of lifting when I was young, like junior high, you know, freshman year, especially because I was still in basketball PE. And, you know, we just did a lot of like squats and cleans and all like lower body lifting, like just, you know, kind of everything and then in conjunction with running and the plyometric nature of basketball and jumping. So I think just all of that is like from a pretty young age, especially as I was going through puberty, just doing a lot of weight bearing things and doing a lot of jumping and doing every sport and every movement you could possibly do, and lifting, I think just and genetics, like, but just all that played a role in my overall coordination, my bone density, my muscle, like just everything. And so I think that just kind of set the framework. So then as I was running more, like I had a base to do that. And then so I think that's like the biggest thing, because a lot of that physiology that you develop, at least structurally, happens when you're, you know, when you're growing. So, and like, you can't go back in time, but yeah, now my lifting has been pretty inconsistent, like really inconsistent. So there's no like routine that I have, but before the 50K, I literally lifted for like 4 weeks, just kind of did everything. I did a lot of like upper back, like a lot of rowing type stuff, like row machine type stuff and pulling, like so lats and upper back, and then just all legs, a lot of hip thrusts, these glute extension things, step ups, like weighted, like as basically as heavy as it goes, step ups, lunges, or walking lunges, leg press, leg extension, kneeling hamstring curls, like hip abduction, adduction, and then calf raises, and then like seated calf raises. Yeah.
Like nice.
Back extensions. Basically like every leg, every leg one. I didn't do deadlifting as much. My back, like, I don't know, I just have a very bad back, so I have to have the weight like really high, because if I bend down too low, I don't know, I felt like I could just do other stuff, like I could do hip thrusts instead of deadlifts, and then I just was trying to build up my back with back extensions. And but yeah, I did it for like, I was doing it for like 4 weeks, and in that 4 weeks I gained like, I mean, a lot of the strength was neuromuscular, but I gained a lot of strength, and my wife was like, you look different, like very quickly. Like, I think my body also responds well to that. And then, and the 50K, I mean, it obviously it went well, but I also felt really good during that. I didn't have any issues, and probably went out. But, well, yeah, I just it looked good. And then yeah, I don't know. I got out of my routine, like my like daily life schedule, and it was hard to like get back in the gym, and so I lifted like hardly at all the rest of the time leading up to Valencia. So I feel like, though, I'm trying to, like, I don't know, it's been a weird time for me, but I'm trying to like get a schedule and just like make my life like just very scheduled, like, and I just have to follow the schedule, because I feel like that's the only way that I do well physically, mentally, emotionally, like everywhere. So like I feel like I need to be like a 4-year-old, and it's like, or no, like a little baby, you know, they like stick to your sleep schedule and your eat schedule. Like, we were never really that strict, but like, you know, we read all the books on it. I feel like I have to be like that. So I think if I can get a nice lifting schedule for like 4 months, like, I don't really know what would happen, because I feel like I realized, because I remember being in high school, and like when I'd lift, like I'd feel good, and like I would adapt really quickly to lifting. And yeah, just like 4 weeks, like I just like my body just changed, and I was like, but like not, I didn't put on weight. Like I was, it was good for me, like for running too. And that was the first time I'd lifted seriously since probably high school. I mean, we lifted a little bit in college, but I don't know.
Yeah. So when you are in a good lifting routine, like what's the different sensations? Like, do you just feel stronger when you're running? Like, what, how does that actually translate over?
There's not like this like huge like pop of strength. It's like, wow, I just feel like super strong. But yeah, I just feel like a little bit more powerful. I feel like it keeps me feeling, I feel like running is just a very like, especially because you train a lot alone, it's like you never just like hit someone, and it's like lifting, you like get that. So like you just have a different feel, and I feel like I felt better just as like a, like I just made me feel better overall. I think you get some hormone effects. I wish I could study this, or you could, but I can't just do it myself. But I started lifting, and I would do a lifting session after my long run would be Sunday morning, and then I'd lift Sunday afternoon. And I felt like it was just like the huge catabolic nature of a long run. I mean, it's got to be terrible for your hormones. But then you go like lift, and I'd lift short and heavy, like just for some reason I could lift way heavier. It didn't make any sense. Like
after a long
run, but I would PR like every Sunday, like I'll lift. But like something about lifting, I feel like it just like, okay, all the catabolic, you just screwed up your testosterone cortisol ratio like in the morning. But then like you come lift in the afternoon, like, and you have to be somewhat careful not to like really get amped up and overdo it, but like just enough to like get heavy. Like I feel like it just, then you just get this nice, like it brings it all back. And then so I feel like if I can get the optimal ratio and be consistent with it, there's a lot
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's like lifting can help you recover from your efforts too. Like when you're telling your story about, you know, the testosterone and how you'd feel and stuff lifting after long runs, I was thinking about when I did the World Marathon Challenge, the 7 marathons, 7 days, 7 continents. Well, after I'd run my marathons, I'd find a gym and I'd go to the gym and I'd lift upper body. And man, I would go down, I'd be walking downstairs to get to the gym, just like hobbling, just like a mess, feeling like trash, you know? And then I'd come out of the gym actually feeling pretty good, you know, like just getting like, yeah, neurologically things like back firing again and like just, yeah, hormonally and energy wise. That's why I love lifting for runners. And it's usually not what you feel like doing though, you know, like after you go do a big long run, you usually don't feel like going to the gym. But if you can kick yourself,
I go like all the way at night. Yeah, like I'll run in the morning, sleep and rest, and then like 5, like, you know, 4:30, 5 p.m. is when I'd go, and then have dinner right after and rest. But
yeah, that's smart. Nice.
Yeah, that does sound super smart. Ryan, what's your thought on that, like rest interval after a workout to weightlifting session?
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally, yeah, you want to spread them out a decent amount, you know, like if you, the more time, the better kind of deal. The only thing is, and I don't know if you have this problem, CJ, but sometimes if I lift later at night, I get like energized and have a hard time sleeping. And of course, you don't want to screw with your sleep. Like that's like number one. So like if that's the case for you, like it is for me, then you might want to pull it back and do it earlier, you know? But if you can get away with lifting, yeah, later. The problem is for most people, I think, is like the day just gets away from you. And then it's like 7 p.m. You're like, oh, dang, I still got to go lift. And you don't feel like it. And you're just like, I'm just going to go to bed and do it tomorrow. And then that's not a good call, you know, because you just did your workout and you're supposed to be recovering. And now you're going to be lifting on your recovery day. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you get energized at all, CJ, when you do a later lift like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to see if I was really tracking my sleep much during that, but I'm not a great sleeper anyways. But yeah, I mean, I'll get energized, but I feel like if I wouldn't go lift at like 7 p.m. But yeah, if it's more like 5 p.m. or if I'm done but like by 6 or something, and then I eat after, you know, then like the like post, like after you eat, then you kind of get tired. So yeah, I wouldn't lift right before bed because I'm kind of amped, but I feel like lifting like 4 hours before bed, then like by that time, you know, because it's kind of like the same thing, like after a run I'm kind of amped, but then like 2 hours later I'm like, I'm dead.
Nice. Well, why don't we move on a little bit to talking about like the mental side of running? Because I know, CJ, I think you put a lot of thought into kind of how you go about your mental game. Can you talk a little bit about the central governor theory and kind of how you apply that to your running?
That's like, I think Tim Noakes' thing. He did a lot of like research with the central governor theory. Basically, like your brain, you know, is controlling your limits, and your brain only like stops you before you reach your physiological and muscular limits. And so, the way I kind of like interpret it or like view it is like basically like your brain doesn't really know exactly what those limits are. I mean, it's got a good idea and it's getting feedback. And so if you do something for the first time, your brain's like, okay, what's happening? Like, don't want to hurt yourself. You don't want yourself to die. The way I always explain it is I always say die, but, and then like you do something and your brain's like, oh, you didn't die. Okay, well, next time we can go just a little bit further because you didn't die this time. So we can go a little bit. And then you keep pushing that and your brain's like, oh, you didn't die this time. Okay, we can go. It resets the bar more and more and more. And so you're getting closer and closer to your actual like physiological limits, your muscular limits, and all the things that are actually like fatiguing you and that are gonna be harmful for you or death. And so that's, I think, like part of, I mean, you do long runs for lots of reasons. You know, you run in the heat for lots of reasons, but one part of it is the central governor. Like your heat's like, I think, a big one. Like your brain will start shutting yourself down, you know, when your core body temperature hits whatever. And then, but if you've done enough runs in the heat, like your you know, your brain's like, okay, it can go. I mean, physiologically, you make a lot of adaptations and you prevent yourself from getting that high, but then your brain also shifts like what's acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good to push those limits so your brain views things as acceptable. But then I think your conscious thoughts also play a role in that, because like when you view things as like maybe like scary or like this is like bad, I feel like that like kind of hyperactivates the central governor to like come in quicker. But when you view something as like this is kind of like what I want, or this is like relaxing, or this is like good, then I feel like it kind of keeps the central governor at bay. It's because you still have that like primal system that's like, I don't know, it seems like it's killing me, but you're like, yeah, but this is nice. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you try to kind of like trick it. I mean, that's a little bit more made up in my head, but yeah. I think every athlete tells you when you're relaxed and you're just kind of in the zone and you're not viewing running the marathon as this crazy thing that's going to be super hard and kill you. You know, you like the winner of Valencia, that guy looked like he was having a great time. Wasn't doing some hard thing that kills you at the end. He's just out there just chilling, running.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I like that thought process. I've heard you say that before of like, don't like normalize it, right? Like it's not that crazy. And I think that sometimes, and I think of like videos that Ryan and I have done for 10,000, they want to make everything look like, oh, it's this gnarly challenge. But I think as the competitor, like viewing it as a very normal thing you're doing is like really smart. So does that kind of come into play why I think, you know, why maybe you are willing to jump in marathons, you know, do harder long runs? Does that play into it? Like, are you trying to get that frequency?
At this point, I don't think I'm trying. I think I've pretty much achieved that. If you look at it that way, like the marathon's very normal for me. I don't view it as like, yeah, it's just like, you know, if you know, my neighbor goes and runs a 5K, it's like, that's me just going running the marathon. Obviously, some 5Ks are going to be really hard and you're gearing up and they're really fast and you're laying it all out there. But, you know, but also a 5K just could be a 5K. So that's kind of how marathons are for me now.
Yeah. So what would you say to somebody, like, say, our listeners who maybe they have had this thought process of it, like a marathon being a crazy thing? Even I feel that way to a certain extent, right? How do you normalize it before you've actually done it?
Yeah, that's a little hard. I mean, like for me, I ran more than a marathon in training before my first one. I wouldn't recommend that to everyone. I don't know. It just kind of depends at what level you're at, how long you've been running. So if it is like, if you are like newer to running and you don't maybe have like, you know, 10 to 15 years of a base of running before you do your first one. Yeah. You're not, I mean, I'm not going to say go run 30 miles before you do your first marathon. Like that's not, you're not going to do that. And plus your goal is more finishing anyways, but yeah. So normalizing it, I mean, I don't know. There's always going to be some aspect of like, you've never done this before. So there's going to be some aspect of like, can I actually do it? And I think that's like, you know, for me, like I'm trying to, every elite runner is trying to normalize like 205, 206 for the marathon. I've never done that before. I've ran that pace for a little bit in a marathon, but like, so that, I'm kind of in the same position as a lot of like first time marathoners, new marathoners. How do I normalize 205 in the same way they're normalizing this running a marathon? So it's like, I don't really know how to get there. It seems like, I don't know, it's hard. But yeah, I mean, I think training's part of it. And then I think the first time you do anything, you do kind of have to be okay with just knowing that there's a chance you won't do it. But just not letting that like overwhelm you, or just like keeping like a healthy, like, yeah, this is a challenge and this is fun. And like, I'm attacking the challenge versus like, this is scary. This is like defeating me. Like, why am I even doing this? Because yeah, it's just not going to be normal because you've literally never done it. I think it's the most realistic way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like you can maybe make peace with like the, you know, quote unquote failure part of that, right? Where maybe it doesn't go exactly the way that your optimal performance would be. But like that's part of the process of discovering to doing it your first time, right? And then I think maybe the takeaway too is like you're making progress just by having done it before, right? Now you're at least one step closer to it being like a more normal process.
I think too, like the cool thing about trying to do something you've never done before is it's very hard to replicate how exciting it is to do something for the first time.
Yeah.
Like when you've never done something before and you're clicking off splits and you're looking down your watch and you're like, is that right? And like you're getting so excited out there and that excitement builds momentum. And then pretty soon you're just freaking running out of your mind, right? Like that's like how that happens. So there are some like positives to trying to do something never done before and then having that come together. But in my mind, honestly, I think the fitness has to be there. You know, I think a lot of people, like you try to think yourself into these performances and there is something to be said for that. You know, like I'm on the rower doing these rows and I'm like telling myself I'm going to drop out every 500 meters, you know, like you're just tricking yourself the whole time. There is that, but then kind of like you're talking about CJ with that guy at Valencia, like he's not having to trick himself through that whole race because the fitness is there. Right. So in my mind, I think sometimes like we let our mind play too much into it. And if there's anything I've learned from the Africans, it's like they just don't overthink it, right? Like they train super hard with a bunch of other guys that are trained super hard. They know, hey, if these guys are going and winning races, why can't I win races? They go try and do it. They don't take it personal when they fail, you know? So yeah, it's interesting to think about like how the mind, because the mind definitely plays into all this stuff, you know? But at the end of the day, like the fitness has to be there. And I don't care what you're thinking. You could be a mental guru, like Wim Hof guy. Like he's not going to think himself into a sub-2-hour marathon, right? I don't care what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That mental normalcy, I think, comes, yeah, it all comes in training. Like, you know, having that, like if I'm, like when I think about like normalizing like 205, 206, it's like, okay, when I'm in training, like 4:45 pace is just comfortable. Like, and so if I'm in 210 shape and I walk out and like, oh, I'm going to normalize 205, like that's not going to happen. But if for like years and years, like 4:45 pace becomes just more comfortable. And I've worked at that for years. And like, I've, you know, started doing workouts that a 205 marathoner would do, then maybe I will show up in 205 fitness. And then it's still going to be hard because even when you have the fitness, the first time you ever race to your actual fitness and PR, like by a lot, like it doesn't always have, like it's, I don't know. It's weird. Like there is that mental aspect, but 95% of that, what it was the mental normalizing to get your fitness where it needs to be. And that's like how going to be how, it, yeah. For almost everyone running a marathon, they gotta, the mental aspect starts the first day of training. Like I'm going, you know, preparing themselves to be able to run a marathon, not just showing up on race day.
Yeah. Ryan, do you think that these African dudes are not having mental doubt like during the race itself? Like, do you think that they're just kind of lighthearted about the whole thing?
Yeah. And so, like, I'm friends with them. I train with them, you know, like I know, like, and you know, when you're really good friends with someone, you know, like kind of what's going through their head, you know, it's kind of like that. Like you can just sense like they're just totally present in what they're doing. And they're not worried about anything. They're just like letting it flow out of them and whatever it's going to be, like it's going to be, and they're fine with it. You know, like there's, yeah, just this like lightheartedness, fun, like, let's go. Let's like a really like aggressive, but also like balanced approach to their mental approach. It's just, it's the best way I can describe it is kind of like childlikeness, like just going and playing in the forest. It's kind of like that kind of sensation is what I think, you know, and from having talked to and been friends with a lot of African guys. And it's honestly like, that's kind of like what I go for, you know, it's like, I like to just like, not feel like I'm working out or going for a run, but just feel like, hey, I'm just out here playing right now. and then just get super aggressive with it. And when you don't feel the pressure, right? And the weight of it, and you're just having fun. You're just a kid having fun again. And that makes it a win-win too. Cause then if you get the time, great. But if you don't, you still had a really good time, had fun out there, you know? So I don't know. That's been kind of how I've been drifting.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that's like why I ran the Malaga marathon, really, is like, I like the game, you know, the marathon is like, I wanted to play. And it was like, I had no idea what I was going to run there, but it's like, I just want to go out and run. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty aggressive. It was a tough race, at least for where I was at the time. But yeah, I mean, and then there was a moment of around like mile 12, or I don't know, something, it just started pouring. I'm just like, I know I'm not going to PR anymore. And it was like, I kind of want to drop out, but then they're like, no, like I just wanted to run. And then it was like, so then I just got to run for another 17 miles and didn't necessarily feel great, but I was like, if I keep going, I know I'm going to catch some guys, because I know a lot of guys are going to blow up, drop out, whatever. Maybe I can be top 10. And then I'm just like, you know, like I want to keep going and just kind of have fun, just like racing through these random street in Spain that I'll probably never see again.
No, it's like a really cool experience. CJ, real quick, I wanted to delve back on, I'm super curious what is going through people's mind when they're in like the worst moment of the marathon, like the most painful moment, the like make or break moment, you know, like you're like in it, you're like navigating so much pain that you're feeling. Like what is going on in your mind in those moments?
I guess, well, I'll give two different types. So like Boston this past year, when I got dropped, I was cramping. So my maximal effort that I was giving, I felt like I couldn't give. It was just like my muscles kept seizing up and I couldn't do anything about it. And so that was just really frustrating. You know, you're trying breathing techniques, you're trying all this stuff, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's like I was just physically fatigued, and for whatever reason you cramp, I was cramping. So that was just like frustrating, because you can't push through it. There's really not a lot you can do. I mean, I felt like I managed it the best I could, because I finished and didn't run super slow. But then in the Olympic trials, that is when, you know, I was still running fast. I got dropped, and it was just hard. Like I was running at my limits. Nothing was cramping. Like I could push as hard as I wanted to. I was in the fitness to push as hard as I wanted to. It was just hard. And I remember just like going back to like telling myself like to relax, and like, you know, I had like a real big motto at the time that like running is easy. And the marathon is easy. So I'm just like, I mean, I was just, everything was just like hard, but I was just like, okay, like this can be easy. Like this isn't like, I don't have to like fight through pain and suffering this last 8 miles. Cause I humans just can't really do that. Like that's not the best way to run fast. It's just to grit through pain. So I'm just like, I'm going to relax. Like I'm just going to find a way to do it. And it's like relax and like have fun, but just more just like relax and like find a way to feel good while running. And so that's basically what I did. And I went from like 20th to 7th in the last like 10K. And not really because I was running crazy fast. It's just like everyone was kind of struggling and I was better at struggling. So, yeah, but I think, yeah, it's not necessarily pushing through the pain, like feeling more pain. It's just like finding a way to like not feel it. I don't know. I don't know if this is the best way, but I always tell like my college athletes, I'm like, if you're feeling pain in a race, like you're really feeling agony, then like you're not racing. Cause like in my mind, when I feel too much of my own body, then like I'm not racing anymore. Like I'm too concerned with myself, which early on in a marathon, you got to tune into what, you know, your splits in your body. But when you get to the last part, like you just got to run and like you just got to want to beat people. And be focused on like keeping yourself relaxed, but also just like, you know, there's other people in the race, like it's not just you. And so beat someone. And so I think like when you get when you really get focused, or when you really get like engaged in the race, you don't feel all that like agony. Like I remember actually in college, one specific race, I was hurt and I was running the 5K, but I was engaged, like I was locked in and I was just like zoned out on the people in front of me. I was kicking when I wanted to kick. It wasn't like I didn't run like crazy fast or anything, but I felt good the whole time. I performed well for the race and my fitness. Right when the race ended, I couldn't walk. I had to lay there for like 20 minutes because of this throbbing pain. But I felt absolutely nothing during the race. I'm like, that's not that you should always do that, but that's like, that's how you, that's what it should feel like when you're racing. You don't feel all this pain. And in the marathon, you're going to, but you have to like refocus. It's like a, it's like mindfulness, you know, like it's not to not think about anything. It's just like when you catch yourself thinking about whatever you're not supposed to think about, or, you know, you're not focused on your breathing. You're just like, oh, my mind drifted. I got to bring it back in. And so it's like when you feel like, oh, everything hurts. Oh, I'm thinking about my own pain. I got to bring it back in and think about relaxing and thinking about zoning out on the person's back in front of me or catching that group in front of me.
Yeah, it's, honestly, that's such a interesting process that it scares me a little bit getting into the marathon stuff, because I often think of it as like we're not runners, we're like survivors of time, where you just got to let time like flow over you, you know? And Ryan, I know Sarah has commented about like counting backwards from her split time, right? She'll count like whatever, 300 odd seconds. And it's such an interesting thing, I think, to be like kind of checked out and checked in at the same time. Like when you're talking about not feeling it, being fully engaged in the race, but then also like you got a long time to go. It's not like you're all of a sudden sprinting by everybody. It's one move and now you're set, you're back in the game. Like how do you manage that moment by moment thing? Are you constantly falling in and out of like where you want to be in your mental state?
Was this to me or to Ryan?
There's CJ.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, you're like in a perfect race, like you're just kind of zoned out. You're just letting your body flow. Your mind's mostly turned off. Maybe you turn it on to make like one big move or something, but you're just locked in and going with the flow. In a marathon, you never have. I don't think I've had that like perfect race. It's like your mind kind of wobbles back and forth just because you're out there for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think sometimes. So sometimes I'm just, well, every race has been different for me, and I've led a lot of races. So I feel like when I lead, I actually zone out better. So maybe that's why I like leading, because I just get to the front and I just run and I don't think about anything. I don't have to worry about looking at people's legs and not tripping on them. I just zone out and go. So ideally, if I could run every race in a tailwind, I could just lead every race. But, you know, unfortunately there's wind resistance and so it's not more complete everything, but yeah. So yeah, sometimes like in Boston, like engaging with the crowd sometimes like is nice for me, because it takes like I'm not focused on my I'm not like thinking about all the hurt that's in there, or like it just kinda like it passes time, because it's just like, oh, I ran a mile, just kinda looking at people and waving or whatever. And then I can like lock in, because like I feel like I can like lock in on someone's back, like just lock in the pack for like a limited amount of time. Like I don't want to give a time limit because I don't really know. But then I gotta like be active in some way. But you don't want to be like too physically active, because then you're just wasting energy. So I don't know. You just kind of look around. Like I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess you're just like constantly just trying to, and that's the thing that I think is difficult. And maybe it just gets well trained in those long sessions where you are just like, yeah, always going back to like tuned in, tuned out. You're aware, but you're not like stewing on anything. Cause I think the worst thing is when you're just like worried about the outcome the whole way, right? When you're like, how do I, like you were saying, being like almost like too checked in, like, how do I feel now? How do I feel now? Or the legs starting to cramp? And I feel like that can be where things go awry.
That's where I like to tell my athletes to think about like trying to fall asleep over the first 20 miles of the race, you know. I remember that's what I was always thinking about. It's like how do I get through this mile as easy as possible, right? Because like I'm tucked into a pace group, I'm just right in the middle of these guys, but like how relaxed can I be right now? How efficiently can I run this mile? And that's the goal for the early on stages, right? Obviously, you know, when the gloves come off in mile 20, 23 or whatever, you're just giving it everything you got. But up to that point, it's like really like a energy conservation goal is something I think about anyways a lot when I'm out there over the first two thirds of the race, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. Nice. We've been going for a bit here, and I really did want to jump in. CJ, I know you mess around with a lot of different like training tools, recovery modalities. In terms of like running toys, what things have worked well for you, and which ones would you say like don't even bother? Like I know you use heat lamps quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, off and on. Everything I use like off and on, I just kind of like play with it and see what it is. And then some things I like, I'll bring back like when I'm training for the trials, like since it'll be in Orlando, I'll probably bring those back out again because you don't really, it could be hot, it could be warm. You don't really know what weather you'll get, but there's a decent chance it'll be on the warmer side. So I'll probably bring those out. And then I've historically not ran great when it's humid. So if it's warm, so I may do a lot more treadmill runs because I found I actually got better in the humidity when I did a lot of running indoors because it's humid inside. Mm-hmm. And then with the heat lamp. So by training for Orlando, you know, maybe I may have to do that more. But yeah, I don't know. There hasn't been any toys. I feel like I would have, if there's one toy that I could invent, it would be something that just like stabilizes your brain pattern so that you can always have the same mood. Because I feel like literally like my only limiting factor in training is like my brain, like, which is funny because my brain is, I'm like, I feel like I'm like two sides, like my inter-workout, inter-race brain is like, I'm pretty good. Like I'm like, I can do long training by myself. You know, people are always like, how do you do the indoor marathon, the 50K on the track, all this stuff? I'm like, I don't know. It's easy. You just go run. It's not that, it's really not hard. Mm-hmm. Like mentally, like it's, I can do whatever when I'm working out. But then my mental stability, like in the rest of life is like pretty low on the totem pole. And so it's like hot, like, I wish there could just be a device that, like, I mean, I guess people take, like, antidepressants and stuff, but that's not that. I don't know. Just, like, something, like, to, like, make you more just stable. Neutral, so then, yeah. Like, I can just, because there's times when you're not motivated and you have to train anyways, but, I mean, like, just, I don't know. It's more severe, I guess.
Yeah, because I think I've heard you say that like the emotional like ups and downs or stress levels, right?
That have nothing to do with running.
Yeah. Like that plays big into energy levels for you.
I feel like I'm like a, I'm like, basically if you take that, because like, basically like people between like adolescents right now, like 15 to 22, like just, I feel like, maybe because I coach college, I just like am forced to have their brain, and I'm young, I'm like 29, but I'm kind of but like I just have that like the same brain, and it's like just
I think you're similar to me in some ways. Ryan's always telling me to just turn my brain off.
I can't. I don't know. So yeah, that's like the biggest thing, because like sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I mean, I think the biggest reason like why. Yeah, like if I feel like if I was just like a like in a normal state of mood, happiness for like 6 months, like I'd like run crazy fast. So whatever I gotta do to get there, I mean, I don't know, we'll figure it out. The past fall has not been good.
Yeah. Well, how old is your kid now?
He's 13 months.
Yeah, I mean, that's not exactly the most stable part of life, right?
I mean, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it easier, but I mean, in some ways it does help, because it helps and then it doesn't, because like sometimes like he's just so happy for no reason. And I'm like, man, like I don't want to be the reason he's like not happy anymore, like bring him down, you know? So like, then it's like, okay, you gotta like, if there's more incentive to be like, because I feel like you can also get like almost comfortable with just kind of feeling bad or down in a way. But then like when you see like a baby, or like, you know, now he can like move around and he's just so happy, it's like, okay, like you, like, and he's like your child, there's a pretty big incentive to be like a very, you know, a vibrant person for your child, you know.
Yeah. Do you feel like that at all is like the training like effect of just the physical swing as well? Because I feel like for me, I use my mood as like a metric for whether I'm ready to go or not. Cause I feel like if my mood is down, it means like I'm probably not well recovered. Maybe I need more sleep. Like, do you feel like it correlates at all with like your training program?
Like a little bit. Like, I know, like I may have, so if I'm training a lot, like let's say like I'm in a good place and I'm training a lot, I may have like a temporary, like, okay, I feel down cause I'm like, I'm tired, like I'm exhausted. But in general, not really. Like, in general, actually, I feel like I'm worse when I'm not training super consistently. Like, during, like, COVID, like, yeah. I feel like when I'm not training consistently, it's probably, like, worse. But, yeah, when you get overtrained, I feel like, yeah, you can have the temporary moods. But the more, like, chronic, long, like, kind of just like this is my normal state of mind right now. Mm-hmm. That's not really correlated. And actually, when I'm training at my best, like when things are like scheduled well and like I'm eating well and I'm on a pretty consistent schedule and I'm running a lot because I'm running twice a day and like it's like the same time, like I'm, you know, like I'm just consistently running the same amount, like that's actually when I feel my best, like mentally and like everything. Like I would. Yeah, so, like, I mean, I could probably be running, like, 140, 150 miles a week and lifting, but if I had everything, like, scheduled right, like, I could be also at my top mentally, and I know that doesn't make sense, but, like, that, I honestly, like, for me, that's probably, there'll be one training block where I think it all comes together, and I think I'll also be, like, just at my most best feeling, and I'll just, my output will be higher. Yeah.
I mean, I know like in me, like I've been trying to run a marathon for like the last 2 years, and it has been like a lot of these ups and downs, both like emotionally and physically. And yeah, so I kind of get that a little bit of, you know, it's like, you know what it's like when it does all just kind of string together well and you get that positive momentum. Yeah, it's so much easier to just like keep it rolling than always trying to regenerate it, right?
Yeah.
Ryan, how do you feel? Like, I think it'd be interesting to hear your input, having been there as a marathoner, pro marathoner, now stepping away from it. Obviously, I think your mentality towards life and everything in general has evolved a lot. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, no, I was just going to tell CJ, like, just make sure you give yourself lots of grace, you know? It's like what you're trying to do is really hard, and you're training at a very extreme hard level. So, like, I mean, I was just tired all the time. Like, I wasn't the most fun, happy version of myself when I was a professional runner. And that's like, that was just part of the sacrifice. Like, I had to make, Sarah had to make, family had to make, people around me. Like, I had to take a nap every afternoon. If I didn't, I was gonna be in a bad mood like the whole rest of the day, you know? Like, so, I mean, just give yourself lots of grace. Like, there's a reason why like guys in Kenya like disappear for 3 months at training camp and don't see their family, you know? It's like everyone struggles with this, you know? You're not alone, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, you know? And I think it will, I know you got to figure it out now while you're still training and going, you know, and it sounds like you will. But also just know, like, once you do get through this season of life and you're in the season I'm in, you're like, oh man, this is way easier. It's like not super exhausted from training, and like you can just relax on stuff, and I'm still getting the sleep, the nutrition, and still training hard and doing all that stuff, but just like it's way easier when you're not running 130 miles a week, you know. So just give yourself lots of grace that, you know, everyone has these same struggles that you're going through, maybe in, you know, different extents, but everyone's going through it.
It's either that or you just need to ramp the mileage up. Like once you hit 200, that's like the sweet spot.
sometimes I feel like that because my brain will be like really, it'll be really active and just like thoughts. And
like you need to like tone it down.
Like, yeah, like what if I just, just keep like running, or like because I feel like I've noticed I've like lost the ability to like just do like mindless things, like just like doing chores, like doing the dishes, doing paperwork. Like I always have to like do random paperwork for work, and I've almost completely lost the ability to do it. Like there's like these classes like I need to take so I can like increase my salary, but like I can't actually sit down and do it because it's like not really like important to me, and like it's just like mindless stuff. But like I think also, you know, there's probably, you know, there's tons of studies and stuff with like how we use our phones and TV and stuff, like maybe that has changed our brains. But I'm like, I just need to like run for like 5 hours every day just with nothing. It'd be so mind numbing that like, and then like, actually, my wife would love this experiment, but if I just like do some dumb chore for like 20 minutes a day that's completely mindless, and I just have to be like blank, just like doing the chore, like that's like therapy.
Yeah.
And I feel like it is, but I just like getting over that hump of like starting that habit is difficult for me.
Yeah. No, I can get that.
But I probably should, instead of like watching TV or something.
Yeah, dude, I've started doing that too, where I feel like sometimes I'll just sit and just be quiet. I'll like, I'm just like completely relaxing my mind and everything, like I'm just not doing anything. And honestly, I think it's actually more restful. Like I feel like when I do that, I could do that for like 20 minutes and it feels like, you know, sitting in front of the TV for an hour or something, you know, where it's just like, I don't know. And I think like you were saying, you could be doing something productive, not just sitting there staring at the ceiling. But
yeah, I did that same thing. I was coming down here to Mexico and, you know, usually I have like podcasts, books on, you know, and I was talking to Jasmine for a while for like the first hour of the drive. Then she wanted to read her book. And I was like, I'm just going to sit here and think.
It's great. I love just sitting and thinking.
I just drove and just think. for like an hour, and I was like, well, I mean, like just sat and think about stuff for a long time. So we should do this more often.
Because it is, I mean, I think it is actually different because we do it so much like running, right, where your mind's just kind of like all over the place. And maybe it's like what we enjoy about running in a lot of ways too, but like actually sitting down with your thoughts is I think also a cool like additional process. But yeah, I mean, I think as endurance athletes, we're kind of weird in a lot of ways. Like, I think we do just enjoy that process of just like, it's like a semi meditative state, like on a, you know, for a long period of time. which CJ, that kind of brings me to, at some point, I know you're super anti trails, or not super anti trails, but you're not interested, right?
No.
I think
dirt is okay, just but no rocks, no
stuff. So how much is that? Because I know, when was it, like 2 years ago or something, you tried to do the rim to rim. Was it rim to rim to rim FKT? Yeah. And then how did that all play out?
Well, I mean, I really wasn't in shape for that, and so that's part of why it was so bad. But also, it was just like, the whole time I was getting so mad at the rock. Well, one, I fell a few miles in, and then the strap on my bottle broke, and then my knees, everything was all bloody. So I was just kind of like irritated from the beginning. And then like I just kept like tripping on all the, like every time I like step up, I like trip on these rocks. And I love the marathon because you're not like every other race, you're kind of running like uncomfortably fast, but the marathon is so relaxed. Like, you just feel so fluid and nice and smooth, and you're running on smooth roads typically. Mm-hmm. So it just feels so good. Like, there's no, like, there is very few better feelings for me than like the first like 10 miles of a marathon. Is just like, man, this is so, like, it's just boom, you're just flowing. The trail is like never like that at all. I mean, it's like a fun little like challenge, you know, every now and then, but I just, there's no fluidity. I mean, the really, really good guys do get that flow over the, like, I mean, and it's, and that's why they're great. But I would just, I don't want to put in the effort to try to get it.
Yeah. Done. Yeah. I totally get you. But on the same front too, when I hear you talk about like wanting to just like run for like 5 hours or something, you know, I'm like, dude, with the engine you have, it could, I think if you could get past certain parts of it, I think you would. And I know that like, it's like access to trails too is a big thing. But if you were in the right place and you got in some time, I think you might fall in love with it.
I may run Badwater because a lot of it's on like road.
Yeah. Is it exclusively on road?
It's a brutal road. I mean, it's 130 miles and
yeah.
Death Valley. It's got all the things. Heat, just don't die basically. It's, and then you may win.
Yeah.
That's I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one for sure. Like, if you're on roads, you're golden.
I think it does go up trails when you climb up, like Mount Whitney, but
I think
enough of it on roads. It's fun.
Yeah. I think they just end at the portal now. I don't think you even go up the trail. Which, Ryan, didn't you just coach a girl who like won it?
Or... Yeah. Ashley. Yeah. She won it and set the course record for females this last year. So, and she, what's funny about that is like, we were prepping for a marathon. And
she was like,
I always go back to like, I love like working from speed and then bringing things up from there, you know, in terms of like our approach to marathon training and everything. It's like, start with like getting really fast over a mile and 5K and then just bring everything up, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she wasn't even like training specifically for that, but she also like she's a triathlete, does a ton of cross training, has a huge engine, was doing a lot of biking and swimming and other activities, you know? So she was, yeah, but yeah, she ran out of her mind, ran unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty wild. I can't believe you guys are prepping for a marathon and she did like 130 miles.
Yeah. So she ran a marathon and then it was like, I forget. Maybe it's like 4 weeks after or something like that, or 6 weeks after a marathon. And then she just, yeah, it's kind of like CJ, just, you know, like look for races, find stuff. And yeah, like that's the thing that's hard about marathons. It's like, usually people only sign up for like two a year, you know, and you're like, man, I hope I catch flyers on these days. But
yeah,
it's nice when like, it's like, yeah, like just show up, put yourself in it and see what happens. As long as, you know, you can do that without like damaging your body. I think it's a good move.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I think this is pretty much everything I wanted to get through. Ryan, were there any other questions that you want to ask?
Yeah. What's your favorite food, CJ?
Favorite food.
Post long run, what do you crave?
Oh, I almost always have like sourdough bread and eggs, or like an egg burrito, some variation of flour and eggs.
Nice.
That's, I just, I don't know, it's just simple, but I just really like it. I really like eggs.
I actually use still a CJ recipe of turmeric straight in the eggs and then you scramble it. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, no, I dig it. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe one last question. CJ, I think that you're probably, you know, somebody who's progressed so well in the marathon, you know, it's just a general idea of like, you know, we have a ton of marathoners that we coach. What do you think are some of the core principles that you think have kind of got you where you're going, or where got you to where you are?
I mean, probably like durability. So just everything I mentioned before, just doing sports, lifting, different movements, plyometrics, weight bearing activities, all that from a young age allows me to train how I train, which gave me a lot of success. Just genetics and just like the desire to do it. I think for the marathon, There's gonna be lots of guys that run really fast. I think historically, just or maybe between like 1990 to 2018, just not that many people really wanted to do the marathon, and found it really fun, and I do. So that you have success at things you enjoy for the most part, and I just always enjoyed running long and hard, and that's what the marathon is. And so I think as more people are like, yeah, I want to do the marathon, and then they find out it can be fun, then, you know, there's a lot of people that are talented enough to run pretty fast. And I think when it comes down to it, when people are really like something and they're invested in it, they're going to figure out how to run fast in it. So I think really that's all it takes. And I think in the next like 5 to 10 years, the marathon, specifically American marathon, is going to be going to look a lot different than it has maybe the past 10 years.
Very cool. Yeah, that's something we hit on a lot. It's like, try to find ways to enjoy what you're doing, enjoy the sensations of running. So I love that. And I don't think anybody's doubted you for a second that you love running marathons. Well, thanks for coming on, man. I think we'll have to do another check-in at some point on your journey here, but good luck at Boston, and we'll be tracking along with you.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate you taking the time.
Sweet. Thanks, CJ.